Today I'm talking to Dr. Lauren Cook, a licensed clinical psychologist, TikTok therapist, as well as an author of a practical guide aimed at millennials and Gen Z for tackling anxiety. This episode delves into the unique nature of anxieties faced by our generation, exploring the root causes, and unpacking practical coping mechanisms. We're discussing the importance of facing our fears head-on, building emotional resilience, and how to ride the waves of anxiety.
Dr. Lauren, welcome to Space of Mind podcast. It's such a privilege to have you.
I am so thrilled to get to be here. Thank you for creating this space.
Absolutely. Anxiety, which is sort of your focus area, is known as the most common mental health conditions being reported in the US and probably worldwide. I think statistics were saying an average of 30% of adults struggle with it at some point in our lives. I'm pretty sure it's more, but your latest book, Generation Anxiety, talks about Gen Z and millennials facing some unique stressors that, you know, really result in those heightened states of stress. So I'd love to start a conversation there. If you could elaborate on some of those and also how they manifest in anxiety.
Yeah, absolutely. It was really interesting doing the research for the book to see what is it exactly for why people are experiencing more anxiety, because we're not imagining that. We are seeing more people struggle and the intensity of symptoms heighten as well. And I really do think it's something going on societally. You know, if you look back in the last decade of what's happened in the United States, it's been one thing after another. And especially, you know, young adults, 75% of them are saying that they feel unsafe in the United States every single day. And can you guess the number one thing they cite as their biggest fear?
Oh, financial insecurity.
Financial insecurity is definitely up there, but they actually reported the highest that it's gun violence. And I really think it speaks to how people are feeling just unsafe everywhere they go, right? Yeah. Grocery store, movies, concerts, all these things that young people love to do and it's healthy to experience. Yeah. Now there's like the holding of the breath. Am I safe here? Are my loved ones safe? And having that day in, day in out absolutely takes a toll on our brains, on our bodies. And I'm excited to have a conversation about that too, right? Of how this is impacting us somatically. It's not just in our minds. It's having a physical impact on us too.
Absolutely. And, you know, you touched upon so many things there, but I think at the core of it, to me, it's this notion of uncertainty, right? I think for me personally, that journey brought me to explore psychological resilience as a skill, which, you know, to me is shocking, is not taught at schools as a basic function that we all need to survive. So to me, it would be great to talk a little bit about the process of developing that skill and, you know, what are maybe some of the key tenets you would consider for, you know, a young adult today that are essential if we're going to, you know, try and attempt to be at any optimal level of mental well-being.
Yeah. I'd say the first step is to just be open to the idea of emotional resilience. I think a lot of people, it feels so averse to even lean into the concept of acceptance around grief, around loss, around what's on the other side of pain, that they don't even want to touch it, right? It's this automatic, well, I could never deal with it if that happened. My world would fall apart.
Yeah.
And it's actually looking at the grief, the fear head on and saying, what would I actually do if this were to happen? And starting to process through that we can, in fact, get through some pretty difficult things, super painful, super uncomfortable, but we can sit with discomfort. And, you know, I listened to an amazing podcast the other day. I love Glennon Doyle's podcast, We Can Do Hard Things. Mm-hmm. And they had this amazing guest on. I believe the guest's name is Alok. And the whole episode was talking about this fear of the inevitable of death. And that is so much of what's tied to anxiety in a way, is this fear of how do I cope with death in my own life, the reality that that's going to happen, and the reality that everyone that I love will pass away at some point too. Talk about not having control, right? Yeah. Anxiety is about wanting to control. When we can start to look at and face the reality of that, we can then start to do the work of emotional resilience. But these are really big, heady concepts that I think a lot of people are very afraid of. And part of my work as a therapist is holding them in that space to know You're safe to sit with this. You're safe to feel these feelings, even though they're uncomfortable. Let's lay back in the hammock of this a little bit, even though that feels really scary.
You know, this is so true. And I'm guilty of this, is I don't know how to sit with my pain. You know, I would much rather find a distraction, whether it's going into overworking or, you know, just anything to get my mind off of what I actually need to face. So are you able to share what does this look like, sitting with our pain?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it really can just be the intentional space of therapy, right? Therapy is a practice where we show up for ourselves. Maybe it's a yoga class. It's a meditation class. We move so, so quickly. I often say we're in the inhale instead of the exhale. Yeah. And we're not creating spaces for ourselves to exhale. Even if it can be going for a walk where you're not immediately calling someone to have noise in your head.
Yeah,
it's having room for the silence, which is really, really hard, I think, for most of us.
And if someone is unsure whether anxiety is something that they struggle with, what would you say are some of the key things that they would notice within themselves to know that that's a problem?
Yeah, there's a lot of hallmarks to anxiety, but one of the key points to it is that the worrying feels out of control. We all worry about different things, our finances, our relationships, our health. But where it really reaches a boiling point is if you feel like you can't get it under control and your brain is the hamster on a wheel, that's something to pay attention to. And then some of the other quick ones I'll mention, if it's impacting your sleep, if you're irritable, we don't talk enough about how anxiety presents as anger and agitation a lot.
Yeah.
If you feel restless, if you feel keyed up and on edge, and then also if you're noticing physical symptoms. Anxiety very much manifests in the gut. So if you find you're feeling really nauseous in the morning, in fact, you throw up, or you struggle with diarrhea, IBS, you're getting headaches, body just tension.
Yeah.
All those signs are cues that the body may be really in that anxiety cycle.
Yeah. And as I was exploring your work, you talk about riding waves of anxiety, which really resonate with the concept. And I've researched this quite heavily of what does the process actually look like. And I'd love to hear your take, because it's inevitable. And as you said, part of it is acceptance. So now that we know this is bound to happen, what would you say would be the key sort of tips for navigating it?
Yeah. So the thing that's really tricky about anxiety and why the process of working through it is so counterintuitive is we feel this spike up, this high wave of anxiety, whatever that looks like for us, whether it's, you know, speaking up in a work meeting, going out on a date, like it shows up in all these different ways. And what people want to do is they want to avoid, right? They want to run away from that anxiety. And when we do avoid, whether it's canceling plans or saying we're sick when we're not, or saying, you know, I'll date in a few months, right?
Yeah.
When we avoid like that, it feels really good in the moment. It's so reinforcing. The problem is that next time we've got to lean in, the wave just got bigger. We feel that much more scared to approach it. And in the process, we've lost confidence in ourselves that we can actually do these uncomfortable things because, oh, shoot, last time I did have to run away from that.
Yeah.
So much of the work is riding out the wave, getting through to the other side of saying, ooh, I can sit with discomfort. I can get through uncomfortable things. That's why I'm really a behaviorist as a psychologist, because I think we have to behaviorally show ourselves that we can endure going out on a date when we feel nervous, that we can endure speaking up in a meeting and feeling ourselves sweat. If we get through those uncomfortable feelings, then the brain buys in and says, oh, I have to give you some credit. You did actually do that. And then what's really beautiful is the wave gets smaller and smaller each time because, okay, we're starting to build confidence. We're starting to build emotional resilience. Mm-hmm. But we have to actually ride out that wave. We can't just run and sit on the shore and watch the waves go by. And we also can't pull out when the wave is at the peak either. That's like actually the worst thing we can do.
You know, this is actually what I found. It's somewhat giving yourself enough evidence to sort of talk yourself out of the fact that this is a problem in the first place. And you know, it's a very interesting thing to navigate for yourself. But I don't know if there is maybe something visually that we could be doing, or just, you know, as a milestone ticking off our routine that you found helps people to just maybe reinforce that new belief or, you know, ways of thinking, because that can be tricky. It's a very intangible thing, emotions. And we might forget that, like, oh, actually, this wasn't that bad. So is there a process or even like a resource that people could tap into there?
Yeah. I really love an anxiety hierarchy for something like this, because people can hear this and think, okay, but what if facing my fear is going to lead me to have a panic attack? Yeah. Or it's way too much. So I always like to have folks give a number to their distress level. We call this objective units of distress, or SUD. And I think this is so helpful for knowing when to approach and when to pull back and give yourself that extra self-compassion.
Yeah.
So if you're like in that 40 to 60 range, with 100 being like, I literally need to go to the hospital, I'm having such an intense panic attack, to 0 being I'm totally chill. If you're in that 40 to 60 range, that is a great sweet spot to know, okay, let's lean in. Let's sit with the discomfort. If you're in the 70s, 80s, 90s, that's the cue of like, yeah, maybe let's stay home tonight and sit back and recalibrate a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think it's helpful to have that nuance for people, because it's not an all or nothing approach, right? There does need to be nuance to it.
Yeah. And I wanted to touch on something controversial there, as you mentioned, you know, staying in, maybe looking after yourself. The idea of self-care these days amongst young people, you know, and there are articles about this everywhere. I see it on TikTok, on Instagram.
Yeah,
there is a sort of commonality now that having a hot bath or reading a book, staying in, is self-care we should be indulging in, you know, whenever we feel like we're anxious. And I think there's something to be said for what we're talking about now, which is really facing your fears head on. And I think knowing what is the right approach for you at the time can be difficult, because you're getting mixed signals. It's like, which one is it? And which one's going to make me feel safe? What are your thoughts on this?
Oh, I'm glad you bring this up. Yeah, because it is really confusing, right? And even self-compassion gets really confusing, because it's like, well, what is being kind to myself versus what feels overly indulgent, right? And that's where I think, you know, you do the SUDS level can be really helpful to say to ourselves, okay, let me lean into embracing some discomfort. I do think a lot of us, we lose practice with distress tolerance skills, getting comfortable being uncomfortable. That's something we actively need to lean into.
Yeah.
If, however, you are getting into that place of panic, if you are getting into that place of dissociating, that's a cue of like, I still need to face fears, but perhaps in a reduced way or in a different way, right? And we just need to get creative about what that looks like. Yeah. So, and sometimes for people, right, with people pleasing especially, which can be its own camp of anxiety, right? Maybe for you, it does look like I need to practice the distress of saying no and staying in tonight because I am so tapped out. And the people pleasing of feeling like I need to go and be with people all the time, maybe that's my facing of anxiety. For others of us, where maybe you struggle more with social anxiety, your facing of anxiety says, you know what? I'm going to give myself that little kick in the booty tonight and show up to this dinner, even though I don't want to and I want to cancel, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it really looks different depending on how anxiety manifests for each person. But it's asking ourselves, what's that sweet spot of distress that I can lean into?
Yeah.
And what is that space where I need to give myself permission to rest?
You mentioned people pleasing, and I can't not jump on it as a fellow people pleaser. Where does it come from most commonly? And what have you found was maybe there must be like a single most important thing, or maybe something we say to ourselves to bring awareness to this behavior so it stops the pattern?
You know, I feel like you and I are both millennials. I feel like our generation in particular really struggles with people pleasing.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that is because we were very much raised in an achievement culture. I think less so for Gen Z.
Yeah.
Like we base so much of our self-worth on where do you go to college? What's in your bank account? We grew up where the standardized ideals of beauty is like the thinnest person possible, right? And so all these different things we've been combating against for a very long time. And we really have internalized this message of To be worthy, I need to be liked. And to be liked, I need to people please.
Yeah.
We fear so desperately people being mad at us that we will just overextend ourselves to no end. I have a really fun kind of quiz in Generation Anxiety of like, what are some cues that you may be a people pleaser? And, you know, really, it's about getting comfortable with people being mad at you, with people not liking what you have to say, with people being upset if you don't go to something, right? All these different things. Now, I think there's a dance, right, where we don't want to get so avoidant that we're not socializing. I think that's been one problem coming out of the pandemic, even still, that people aren't socializing how they used to. But it's honestly an exercise of, you know, let me slow myself down because people pleasing happens so instantaneously. I mean, we say yes without even thinking about it, right? So I have a rule with myself. When someone asks me to do something, let me give myself at least 24 hours before I respond. Yeah. And then I can know if it's truly an excited yes or if it's a yes coming from a place of resentment. Mm-hmm. You know? And if it's coming from a place of resentment, that's a sign for us. Let's not indulge in the people pleasing today. Let's sit with the discomfort of setting the boundary and saying, no, I can't do it this time around. And that's okay.
I've come to really believe in this idea of clarifying your values to actually know what aligns and what is true to what you want versus what everyone else wants. And I think a lot of anxiety actually does come from the not knowing who we are and what we want. And it's like, the choice you face, of especially, you know, Gen Z now, it's like, whoa, you know, you can be anything and the opportunities really can be endless, especially on the internet and with social media. And I know there are different ways of sort of arriving at those conclusions, but do you have experience of finding, you know, what does the self-exploration journey look like? Maybe where it starts for those who really are truly struggling with their identity or, you know, finding themselves lost between people pleasing and sort of not fitting in exactly.
Yeah. Well, and I love what you were just bringing up about the values piece. It has to start there. You know, I see a lot of people anywhere from the age of like 13 to like 40s typically. And I will often see my clients, you know, in their even late 20s and on, really being unhappy because they're not connected to their values and they've been people pleasing and living for everyone else's values.
Yeah.
So we really have to get clear on what matters to me and not seeing that from a selfish place, but seeing that from an authentic place, because if we are honest with ourselves about what we value, we can show up so much more wholehearted in our relationships. We have way better genuine shot at happiness.
Yeah.
But it takes a lot of courage to live out those values, right? Anxiety tells us to live for the values of others, live for the safety, right?
Yeah.
And so it's very courageous to live out our values. But I will often say, you know, values induction is not about pain reduction. But the thing that's beautiful about that is that when you're clear on your values, you can handle pain better.
Mm.
Because you're grounded in the fact of, I know who I am. I know what matters to me, so I can handle better people being unhappy with the choices that I make because it's congruent for me and it's not people-pleasing for others.
Yeah,
I've got a really, I think, helpful values guide that hopefully we can share with podcast listeners so that they can walk through, you know, and find your top 10 values. I think it's one of the best gifts we can give ourselves to know that.
Absolutely. It really is like a North Star for ourselves and, you know, the world around us. You actually mentioned also working with intersectional identities and, you know, how do factors like race, gender, your background affect anxiety? I think it's important to mention this because a lot of us represented online might not be representative of the community, you know, across the world. And how would you say, or to what degree do those factors actually affect how anxiety manifests itself?
They're everything. I write about this in Generation Anxiety, the differences in why we can feel anxious sometimes. And some of us have the privilege of being anxious in a way, and others of us, it's a given, it's an automatic. And it's not to invalidate anyone's experience, but when you think about how some people are anxious of, where am I going to go to college? Or What restaurant should I go to? Oh, I get anxious at a restaurant about what to order. And then other people are anxious about, is a bullet going to come through my window tonight?
Yeah.
Is one of my family members going to get harassed or assaulted? These are very different things. And, you know, I think it can happen quickly where people think that anxiety is either a low-hanging fruit or everybody has anxiety or anxiety is not a big deal. Anxiety is made up. Just get over it. When you think about what certain people in this world are facing, how can they not be anxious? It's a completely appropriate response. And yeah. I think we need to validate and then do something about it, right? Yeah. We can't just be passive bystanders to this. The core of Generation Anxiety is talking about this idea of empowered acceptance. One, we have to accept what is. We can't run away from these problems and put our head in the sand and say, la, 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 problem. No, it's all of our problems. Yeah. We need to accept what is, and then we need to be empowered in doing something about it. Yeah. If we're going to resolve our anxiety, we have to take action. And so that's me caring about you. That's you caring about me and all these people that we don't even know, right? But to care about these problems and to get in touch with our empathy, that there are people who are suffering and scared and hurting, and we need to do something about that to be a part of the solution.
Yeah. And you openly share your own set of struggles with anxiety, which I think, you know, everyone I speak to, there is a personal story as to why they're in the field they're in. Would you be able to share maybe what you would consider your lowest point and how you talk to yourself out of it?
Oh, that's a good question. There's been several low points, so it's like where to begin. But
maybe the past few months.
All of my life, really, I've struggled with emetophobia, which is a phobia of vomit. And one thing that's been so cool about sharing my story, there has been so many people that have come out and said that they too struggle with emetophobia. And I think that was really something that was not getting talked about very much. But it was something in my life that was becoming totally debilitating for me. I didn't want to go to restaurants. I didn't want to travel. And I didn't want to have a child because children throw up, pregnancy, morning sickness, all these different things.
Yeah.
And that was like one of the most important decisions of my life of like, do I become a parent or not? And it really freaked me out of like, oh my gosh, like, is my emetophobia really going to dictate this decision for me? Yeah. And that was where I really had to look it in the face and say, you know what? I do not want to let my anxiety win anymore. And it really was the values work of realizing, no, I value the idea of having and creating a family. So values induction, not about pain reduction. Yeah. I knew there would be pain in that choice. There would be discomfort, but it was worth it to me enough because it was aligned with my values. And from going to the lowest of low places with that to now feeling really high and good about it in that I have a 10-month-old son now.
Oh, and congrats.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, I will say this till I'm blue in the face. I have never felt more like a badass becoming a parent because I am actively facing that fear that I have. I'm not letting it rule my life. Mm-hmm. And that feels super empowering. And I want to give that to other people too, so that they're not living under the shadow of their anxiety as well.
That's so wonderful. Wow. I mean, congratulations. It's not an easy thing to do and overcome our own shadows. So, you know, and I find a big component in any healing journey is really discipline. Like one thing I started to understand as I was also building out space of mind with our need for sort of weekly touch points, why it was important is because it's easy to have one low point and say to yourself, okay, I must do better and then not do anything about it, you know, for weeks or months on end. From your work with your patients, would you be able to share maybe some quick tips on sticking with the long-term journey? Like what are maybe some of the things we can implement for ourselves daily? A reminder or just give us enough to, you know, do that extra step for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I will be an advocate all day, every day for paper and pen strategies. I think there's something powerful of putting pen to paper, whether that's journaling, whether it's writing a daily to-do list. I think that's really grounding for people. And I'm always sharing about chunking, which We need to rename, but there it is. Make tasks small for yourself. Give yourself little wins. A lot of us make the mistake of saying like, oh, today work on a 70 slide deck. I'm sorry. Like, yeah. Oh, who can do that? Yeah. No, instead we're going to write down, make 3 slides and give yourself that win. So make it smaller. And then, you know, I'm super excited about all the research that's coming out about the gut-brain axis connection. I really do believe that the food and the drinks we put in our body impacts our mind and our, yeah, our overall gut health. So getting curious about the foods that you're putting in your body, noticing, oh, am I gravitating towards this? Am I wanting a lot of sugar? How is that impacting inflammation in my body? Am I noticing that I'm wanting to use alcohol as a way to cope with my symptoms?
Yeah.
Is that contributing to anxiety the next day? Yeah. So just starting to get curious about that. And the last quick tip I'll share is, if you can, exercise 20 minutes a day. That is the best natural antidepressant we can give ourselves. And antidepressants are, in fact, often prescribed for anxiety, not just depression. So exercise 20 minutes a day and get sunshine on your face. We're not getting enough vitamin D, most of us. Yeah. And this has a correlation with anxiety and depression. So if you can get that warm sun on the skin, that is very, very helpful for our brain health.
And you also mentioned something which I forgot to expand on, which is the culture of achievement and overwork, and particularly for, you know, millennials. What have you found in your own journey? And you've achieved so much. So, you know, I'm sure you have that big drive within you too, where it sort of prompts you to keep going. What have you found for maybe quieting that inner voice that constantly wants you to keep pushing when you clearly burning out, on a way to burnout?
Takes one to know one. This has been probably one of the biggest battles of my life, of deciding I'm not going to play the game anymore. You know, I think we really have an addiction to growth and success and striving. And I think that can be a really great thing to an extent. But then we don't realize when we've actually landed, when it is good enough. Yeah, I've said this year, my goal for 2024 is to not actually set goals.
Love that.
Which is really weird to say.
Yeah.
But I was having a great conversation with my friend Hannah. She's an amazing woman. She does a lot of horse therapy, actually. Hmm. And we were having this conversation about, you know, when do you know that you have made it? And not made it in like some financial sense or something, but like, you're here. Like, can you enjoy your life? And rather than feel like what's next on the docket, it's like, no, let's just enjoy this day. And I think that's a constant practice. Like, I am not going to say for a second I've mastered that in any way. But it is learning how to just sit with myself, like we were talking about earlier in this conversation, yeah, sitting in the silence and feeling like my life has meaning in it, even if I'm not checking a box. And actually, there's probably more meaning when I'm not checking a box. Mm-hmm. That's a continual, it's a meditative practice coming back again and again and again. Mm-hmm. I think that's some like real deep unlearning that a lot of us are trying to do, myself and.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I must say, personally, having, you know, after I started the company, it's become more and more difficult to know when to switch off, because, you know, if you don't work, things don't work. So it is something, especially for startup founders, I find that needs particularly close attention, because that can be a very dangerous line to walk. And, you know, and we need to start shifting our understanding of what caring for ourselves look like, and that it's as productive to take time out as it is to stay productive. You know, I really have experienced this in my own self and my own body. So thank you for sharing that. And honestly, thank you for this time. There's been so many great nuggets, and I would love to share this value clarification exercise with everyone here. So I will link that below. And thank you. It was lovely to meet you.
Oh, so lovely to meet you too. Thank you for your beautiful questions and for this space you're creating. I'm glad the universe brought our paths together today.
Today, I'm talking to Dr. Lauren Cook, a licensed clinical psychologist, TikTok therapist, as well as an author of a practical guide aimed at millennials and Gen Z for tackling anxiety. This episode delves into the unique nature of anxieties faced by our generation, exploring the root causes and unpacking practical coping mechanisms. We're discussing the importance of facing our fears head-on, building emotional resilience, and how to ride the waves of anxiety.